Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arseblog 20 podcast series, in which we celebrate 20 years of Arseblog by talking to a guest about a calendar year of the site's existence between 2002 and 2022. In this episode, we are talking 2003, and my guest is Clive Palmer. Hi, Clive.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. How well do you remember 2003? It's all right there. You didn't have to refer to any notes, I take it.
I had to refer to my notes extensively, and in our pre-pod chat, you know I had to extend. Look at my notes. This is going to be funny, as I can't remember what I had for dinner last night.
Yeah, though, I mean, it works in different ways for different people. You might not remember what you had for dinner last night, but there are indelible memories from years ago when Arsenal were doing fun things in 2003. And, you know, I think it's fair to say, like most of the years that we've been covering in this series, there are ups and downs in 2003. But where do you want to start?
I tell you what, contextually, I just want to start to say, when I think about the things I used to moan about then, and given the team that we had in 2003 and what that led into, I feel ashamed. I should apologize. I got to apologize to the club and everybody else associated with them. I need a real good look at myself, right? So, there was a couple of games that year that really sort of stood out for me. And I will start with Inter Milan. Mm. Inter Milan away, the 5-1. It's one of those trips that you feel lucky about. Mm-hmm. It's one of those games that you think, crikey, this is a special moment. And I don't go to loads and loads of games. When you pick the right ones, they stay with you forever.
Yeah.
This is not Tim Stillman here, you know, who goes to every game. I've had some bad choices, but this is one of the better ones. And it's all about Thierry Henry, really, wasn't it? Because at that time, he really, for me, announced himself as the best player in the world. And that was my overriding feeling. He was playing against Zanetti, if I remember, and Zanetti was a top defender, and I remember thinking, this is going to be quite tough, it's going to be worrying, and he just turned on and just decided he was going to win the game, and it's one of those days when he's just like unplayable, really. And it's one of those. I also haven't got a fantastic European history. I was there in Copenhagen when we won, and another day that passed me by with a little bit of drinking going on, but our European history is not great. And so these sort of nights don't come along very often. And it's a good one.
Well, it really was. And it's one of those, when I picture it in my mind's eye, it's like an archetypal European night. Even, I don't know how to explain it, the sort of the grain of the TV footage. I know you were there, but this is true of European football as we used to have it on television. This was before HD and all that kind of stuff. There was something about either the camera angles or the colours or the grain of the TV footage that made you instantly know that this was a game happening in Europe and not in the Premier League. And this was exactly that. I don't know whether it's the flares from the stands or whatever it is, but an amazing night, amazing game because Arsenal went ahead. Thierry Henry scored. Christian Vieri scored then for Inter Milan. Freddie Ljungberg put us ahead in the second half. And then, you know, it was a relatively even, if I remember correctly,
remember Jeremy Aliadier came on in that game. I don't know why. Is that right? Yeah, I think you remember that. I remember him as a player, feeling he was on the cusp of doing something really, really good.
Mm.
And injury kept striking him down. And that was, he's a free-running, very athletic, agile forward and just never had the time he deserved in our first team, in my opinion.
The injuries, I think, played a part. But that goal then that Henry scored, which came from an Inter Milan corner, and if I remember correctly, it was Materazzi who was complaining about a foul, which is something he did quite a lot of. But it was Henry against Zanetti. And as you say, Zanetti at that time and throughout his career was an amazing footballer, a really, really brilliant defender. And Thierry Henry roasted him, not once but twice. Yeah. And to do what he did and to fire the ball in the corner into the net the way that he did, it was just absolutely sensational. One of our great European goals, I think. And Henry, of course, has scored a couple of those in his time.
Yeah, we just, at that period, it was just a matter of time before we won the big trophy itself, right? And that's how it felt. And
still waiting.
Later on in the next year, which I'm not allowed to talk about on this podcast, but I can't help it. But as soon as you mentioned 2004, you just think about Wayne Bridge, right?
Yeah.
And that is the moment of our lives.
Right? Yeah. So, it sure is. The other goals that night scored by Edu and Robert Pires, to put some real gloss on what was an amazing scoreline, Inter Milan 1, Arsenal 5. An amazing European night. Right, where to next?
Well, towards the end of the season, really. So it was the FA Cup final against Southampton in Cardiff.
Right? Yeah.
So I was a bit younger than Andrew, so it's all about the social. It still is, probably. It's all about the social. And I can, back in those times, I can remember we ordered a big, long limousine. Right? And then went to Cardiff. And a big limousine. I don't know how, about 8 of us in it. It was a massive thing. And off we went to Cardiff and a few drinks in tow and took the long way round. Basically, parked up outside the castle. And the way that Cardiff actually works on cup final days, they literally turn the whole of the town. I mean, if anyone's ever been to that stadium, it's an unbelievable day out. Mm. Everything is so close, the town centre, and it's just brilliant. And nightclubs open up in the daytime, and it's a very social occasion. And Southampton, we were sort of, almost favourites to win, although we took a bit. I remember it was hard work. But it's hard work staying awake for me in that game because I drank too much. But it was a fantastic social occasion, shall I say. It was better than the game. If I remember right, I think Pires scored in a rebound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my favourite player, which was Patrick Vieira, I don't think he started, if I remember
right. He wasn't available. Yeah. He was injured, I think. Yeah, and Sol Campbell wasn't there either.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, although I was confident, you sort of start to worry about people who were missing, and and at those days, a lot of Arsenal's games, Vieira was missing for various reasons, and it's always a bit of a trauma. So, a wonderful occasion, and Cardiff is a great place to go, and obviously Wembley was being rebuilt at the time. We had a lot of success there, actually, even though, we did have one cup final, we messed up, but I was there for all of them, and the two. I won't mention the other ones, Andrew. I must not jump ahead.
No. But, stay in your lane.
stay in my lane. But a real great occasion, really, rather than a great game.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Martin Keown and Oleg Luzhny was our central defensive pairing that day. That's how down to the bare bones we were in central defence. And Keown, I think he had to have like painkilling injections to get him through the game. Luzhny, a workhorse of a right back, not really a central defender, but his experience that day.
He had his game, didn't he?
They had a guy up front called, was it Brett Ormerod?
Yeah, I remember the name. Ormerod. How do you remember that?
Well, he's like a prototype Jamie Vardy kind of guy. That kind of a striker. And Keown and Luzhny had to work hard to keep him in it. 1-0 win. I suppose we should mention that in the semi-final, we played Sheffield United at Old Trafford. Was it Old Trafford, wasn't it? That's when semi-finals used to take place.
Yes, it was Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Exactly, yes.
And that was the David Seaman save. The David Seaman save.
Yeah.
pretty, I mean, look, he made some brilliant saves for us in his career, a long and storied Arsenal career, but that is the one that gets replayed over and over. One, because it's just a remarkable save, but two, because I guess he was coming towards the end of his Arsenal career. He would leave Arsenal in the summer of 2003, and for a man of those years, and you and I will understand this very well, you lose a smidgen of flexibility along the way, don't you? So
just a touch. I think he was making sure he kept his hair though, if he was losing his flexibility.
Yeah.
That was full on ponytail days, wasn't it?
It sure was. Yeah. An amazing save.
Yeah, amazing save. And again, I wasn't at that game, because I was just saying to you beforehand, I was on holiday in Tenerife. It was like a last minute holiday, a lad's holiday. Someone didn't turn up, and the next minute I'm in Tenerife with 45 people in the bar watching that game. And really, I always felt that Arsenal had a really good FA Cup fortune and memories, but not so much in the League Cup and Europe. I feel a lot of bad things happen in those competitions.
Yes.
Yep, the FA Cup, we seem to have a really rose-petaled path sometimes, and events do go for us. And that semi-final, to be fair, was a really tough one, and we came out the right side. Right?
Yeah, so. I mean, you might look at Sheffield United and Southampton as relatively easy as a semi-final and a final, but we also beat Chelsea in the quarterfinal. You know, so it wasn't like we had it our own way. I think it was a replay against Chelsea as well. So, and we beat Man United in the previous round. So, you know, the path to the relatively what you might call straightforward opposition for the semi-final and final, we had to do a lot to get there. And even those games, you know, 2-1-0 wins, 1-0 over Sheffield United, 1-0 over Southampton, you know. And we're talking about some of the best Arsenal players we've ever seen in our lives. It does show you that games, even back then, were very fine margins.
Yeah, I think that whole period, Andrew, towards the end of that season, I thought we won the league in 2002, and we should have won it 3 years on the trot, right?
Yeah.
No missing. And we got a little bit arrogant. We got in amongst ourselves, and it cost us. We were the best team, you know, without a doubt. We were the best team in the country. It was our time. I've often felt I know it's a terrible thing to say, but I think we underachieved that team slightly. We were one or two trophies short.
I agree.
And you don't realize, if you talk to anybody today about our best ever five players in our history, maybe three of them were in that team. You know, and that can't, you know, we can't come out of that with what we did come out of it. We should come out with some things that we never forget, right? So, which we ended up doing, but there was more on the table, you know, and there was definitely a feeling of you wait. And that literally did transpire from almost like one of the very first games of next season. We haven't really spoke about this one, but I hope I've got it right. Remember the Middlesbrough away one, which was one of the first league games of next season. I remember watching that at home, and we just killed them within 15, 20 minutes. Right? So, and it was like this new breed of, okay, we're good, and we're going to show you that we're good. And it was just dashing football, you know, literally one touch, transition, early crosses, technique, clear finishes, no messing, you know. Absolute clarity around the box, team play, extra pass. I mean, you know, we've all developed our knowledge of analysing football, and I'm not sure how I would have analysed those games today as I know today, you know. And but I can remember looking at the screen and thinking, we are different to everybody else, and we are better. And it was no debate about it. And so that was a very special moment in my Arsenal watching life.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's difficult to talk about, you know, the second half of 2003 when we start that 2003-2004 season, which, as we all know, ended so amazingly in Premier League terms, right? But I'm curious now, with the benefit of time and hindsight, how you view the end of the 2002-2003 league season, where I think at one point in March we had an 8-point lead over Manchester United, and it got whittled away, and it got whittled away, and there were some drop points. Maybe we lost a game against Blackburn. And then there was a game against Bolton where Martin Keown scored an own goal. But I think this is a really fascinating game. Frustrating still, because Sam Allardyce, of course, was the manager of Bolton back then. And we began to... You know, I think Arsenal's technical quality was obvious to everyone. And this was still an Arsenal team that was physical. You know, there were real men in that team. You have Vieira, you have Bergkamp, Parler, Gilberto, Lauren, Saul Campbell. You know, these were no shrinking violets by any means. So if you put it up to Arsenal physically, you knew you were going to get a bit back. But that Bolton game, I think, changed something in the way that teams began to approach playing Arsenal. Because I remember on the day we lost two or three players to injuries, to bad tackles. And it was such, I think it was JJ Okocha, you know, an amazing, skillful, talented player. I think he could have nailed Freddie Ljungberg or Lauren or somebody. And you're thinking, well, this is the start of something. And I think from there, the Arsenal don't like it up 'em thing began to develop, where the way you counter this team was to get really, really physical. And we saw that manifest itself in later seasons with horrendous injuries for players, because that perception became like the reality for other teams. And you can accept that there is a gulf in quality, and the physical side of the game is something I love and something I enjoy, but it's got to stay on the right side of it. And I always felt that game was deliberate. I thought they were deliberate fouls to put Arsenal players out of the game. We drew that game 2-2. And then in the next game, that was the game at Highbury against Leeds, when that Mark Viduka goal, which still gives me a sinking feeling in my stomach, you know, pretty much put an end to our title chances, you know? So sort of looking at what we became in the next season, how far do you think the end of that 2002-03 season influenced that? Like, do you think that team could have gone unbeaten if they had won the title that year?
Probably not. I think what we did in 2003-04 was forge in adversity of the way that the season ended before. I think people felt robbed. There was a level of arrogance about how we played, because we were so good, and we knew we were good. But we were different. We were the team with the most foreign players in at the time. And there was a different feeling around the game. I mean, Alex Ferguson ran the game, shall we say. He ran the game. He decided the fixtures and who was refereeing each game. And he had his mates, including Sam Allardyce, that, you know, were happy to support him and his journey, shall we say, right? Fergie did his stuff for the LMA, looks after all the other majors looked after him. Let's get stuck into Arsenal. And I've always felt this, you've heard me say this before, Andrew, I've always felt we almost became the foreign team in the Premier League. We were the different team. We weren't English anymore. We were that team run by that foreign manager, bringing in his foreign players that we don't know nothing about, and they're actually winning. And they're winning in a way that's physical and technical. And first it was quite nice. And it's like, okay, we need to get our game back here. We need to get our game back. And I've always felt that we were targeted. And it's continued for years. We were targeted, yet when we responded, we suffered the maximum penalty, as we're doing today, actually. And we suffered the maximum penalty.
Yeah.
And it was like, and since then, we've almost been characterised by ill-discipline. And as you said there earlier, our inability to handle those physical moments when really the game should have been refereed appropriately and not based on narratives. And I've strongly believed this. And when you go through those periods, I know you were heavily involved in those periods. I know you probably had similar feelings around that period.
Your point about Arsenal being the foreign team, I think, is really cogent, because there was an incident early in the 2003-04 season, and there's probably a big game at Old Trafford that we should reference as well when we talk about this season. But Robert Pires, well, he won a penalty. And I think it's fair to say that he won the penalty. You know, you know me, I love Robert Pires. More than the next guy, not as much as more. But I think in that situation, he won a penalty. Yeah. I've seen worse dives in my time, and I've seen worse dives from English players in my time. Not just modern day ones, but you know, other star English strikers who were able to dive over Argentinian legs, and it was clever, and it was you know
the guy. I think about the same guy myself.
Exactly, but from there,
wasn't it?
Yeah, but from there. Pires is, if you want to say, stained with a reputation as a diver. And I don't think that's true of him at all. I think in that particular instance, he made the most of whatever slight contact there was.
Yeah.
But he's immediately a diver, whereas other players, because of the nationality, because of their passport, or because of the three lions on their chest, you know, were able to do that with greater frequency and escape completely the vitriol from the press and from other football fans.
Yeah, we were almost demonized, almost, right? I'm sure that's too strong a word, but and it was like it created a protective state for people who wanted to hurt us, and this continued. I mean. And I'm jumping, but you know, the game when we finally did get beaten is the refereeing travesty of all time.
Yes.
You know? And for people of a certain age that may not have seen that game, don't watch it because you will get, it will ruin your life. You'll ruin your life. And there's enough referee conspiracies around at the moment currently anyway. So, and again, I feel strongly about this. It was definitely a narrative-driven age around refereeing, and we were definitely the wrong side of it, and we were definitely different. It has changed up to a point, but now for that period of time, it was all about getting our game back. You know, let's play. You don't like it. This is how it works in England. This is a Premier League. If you don't like it, you can go and do one. It felt a bit like that to me, and the best way to respond was to internalize those feelings and go and do what we did, right? So without doubt, I definitely agree with you. You know, 2004 was born in the end of 2003 season.
How much, you know, the I mentioned the Old Trafford game, so I think we should probably talk about that, given that we are in that ballpark, if you like.
Yeah.
0-0. At Old Trafford, the rivalry between the two sides was huge. The enmity between the two managers was probably at its peak. The fan bases couldn't stand each other. You know, these are two big, brilliant teams. And I'm happy to give credit to United, because we couldn't have had that rivalry without them being as good as they were and without us being as good as we were back then. So, you know, it was brilliant. Genuinely one of the most exciting periods in my football watching life. But the fan bases couldn't stand each other, and this all played out, and you know, the players couldn't stand each other. And you think about some of the players that they had, the Gary Neville, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Solskjaer, because Solskjaer, do you remember that incident? I think it was in 2003 where the Sol Campbell elbow.
Yep, I'm not sure it was one, but you know, no, maybe rose tinted glasses here.
No,
but
I don't think so. I would never give Solskjaer the benefit of any doubt whatsoever. I think Sol was just a bit too strong for him. You know, so this was all feeding into that. And there's this game, Vieira is sent off for kicking out at Van Nistelrooy. He didn't actually make contact. And there was the Vieira Keane thing. And then they have the penalty in the last minute. And he hits the bar and all hell breaks loose. And some of the images from that, which people will remember, Keown with his star man on Van Nistelrooy. The one that I always remember, the one that I enjoy the most, is Lauren grabbing Phil Neville around the throat and just the terror on the face of Phil Neville, because he's surrounded by, I think Ashley Cole is there, and there's another couple of Arsenal players there, and he's like, oh shit, I'm outnumbered here. How much do you think, when we talked about that, as you said, internalize the sort of the way we felt we were being treated, all that went on after that, like the FA hearings and the fines and the papers going crazy. I mean, this was like pre-social media stuff. Yeah. So this would have been unbelievable, unbelievable if it had played out online now. Something like that would just be mayhem. But it was even mayhem back then.
Yeah.
I mean, that I think also played a big part in consolidating this squad and focusing this squad on what they wanted to do that year, which was to get the league title back from Manchester United.
Yeah, I think that game was, there's so many moments in that game. Obviously, they were like the World Cup finals of that era.
Mm.
And let's be honest, for us, and maybe for the Premier League, it was the golden era of the Premier League. Because that's when it really did become a global game.
Yeah.
Because everyone wanted to watch these two teams, you know. And I can remember, Lauren, funny enough you mentioned Lauren, because obviously Ruud van Nistelrooy was the person to hate, shall we say. And there was a tackle from Lauren on Ruud van Nistelrooy in that game which nearly broke his back. And it was just like, it's not the way to tackle. He just stood there and just stopped him, like running into a wall.
Yeah.
And this was the thing about Arsenal in that period. We could fight with people and we could outplay people and outrun people. I always remember that Fergie had to go and buy Eric Jemba because he couldn't run with us. Mm. He was looking for athletes. He was looking to try to find a way to compete with this team with their funny creatine tablets, shall we say. You know, and that's where we were. And they're broccoli. Who are these people? You know, it was a game that never will leave people's memories who were watching it live. I do feel, and I remember thinking at the time, I didn't think any of that looked unreasonable to me, any of the reaction from Keown, anything like that.
Mm.
It was totally, totally understandable if you had gone through some of the previous refereeing decisions, the way Van Nistelrooy got away with things. No, this was totally understandable. They should have been given money, bonuses, rather than fined, as far as I'm concerned. They should have been given, there were those special little gold guns they give out, you know, for 100 appearances, things like that. Every one of them were heroes. And I sort of remember a TV clip of after the game, just sort of Wenger sort of leading everyone off the pitch and Keogh walking behind him. And it looked to me like they've just gone to war and here's my boys walking behind me and we're coming for you. And it just was epitomized everything to me, watching the game in the moor in a very febrile atmosphere. It was like, yeah, we've gone there and we've come out of there unscathed. And from there on in, it just all kicked off.
Yeah. And when you think about, you know, that squad of players, maybe nowadays we're a little bit worried that our squad is light, but I mean, it was a smaller squad back then.
Yeah.
The club was fined £175,000, which at that point was the largest ever fine given by the FA to any club. Lauren got a 4-game ban and a £40,000 fine. Keown, 3-game ban, £20,000 fine. Vieira and Parler, 1-game ban, and they had £20,000 fines. Jens Lehmann was originally charged, but later dropped. Ashley Cole, a £10,000 fine. And I'm with you. Like, do you know what would... you know, I think if this happened now, there would be a lot of like, oh, they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have reacted. They should know better. They're professionals. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck it. No way. Yeah. Absolutely no way. This was like a tinderbox that had been smoldering and smoldering for years and years and years. And it was always going to ignite at some point. And let's remember that there were some feisty encounters between those two teams before any of this happened, you know?
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Just an unbelievable moment, I think, in that season and in the club's history, because it's, you know, it's something that a stain is the wrong word, because I'm sort of quite proud of it, to be honest.
Extremely proud. Extremely proud. And often when I'm talking about the game today, Andrew, and as we both do, and I talk about when we get beaten and beaten up in games, my mind goes back to those days. I don't actually say it because I don't like to always look backwards all of the time. It's all about looking forwards, and the game has changed. But it's a certain fundamentals to the game of football where you have to have the ability to stand up for yourself physically.
Yeah.
And particularly in England. And if you don't, things will happen to you. You can't expect referees to look after you, right? Because they don't, right? So, look after yourself. And for me, they represented me on the sidelines.
Sure.
Without a doubt, I really, what's the word I'm looking for, felt associated to that team. They were the representation of myself, you know, the age I was then, without a doubt. And every one of those players, I absolutely adored for how they approached the game. I think that was the key thing for me. They approached it almost like a fan would approach it if we were talented enough to play, you know. And and that's what I loved about that group, you know. And I think it's part of the badge, and I see some of that coming back, if I'm honest with you, today. But at that period of time, it was just something we expected, and we maybe didn't realize how special that group was. Not just as talented footballers, but how they felt about the football club.
So. Yeah, I mean, I often think about that and like, would I have enjoyed it more if I'd known blah, 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 you know, that way? Like if we knew that it was going to be X amount of years until our next title win, which we're still waiting for, would you enjoy it more? But I fucking loved it at the time.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy it. Maybe I would have savored some of it, but you get this sense that when things are going that way, that like it's hard to see, you know football, there's ebbs and flows, it's ups and downs, but you kind of think, well, this is so good. How can it just not be like this all the time? We've got a brilliant manager, we've got brilliant players, we can attract great players, we're winning things, or, you know, maybe under, as you say, underperforming in Europe, which I think is true, but you know, Arsenal was the most attractive destination in English football, apart from Manchester United, and maybe then Chelsea, which became attractive for financial reasons rather than football reasons. You know,
yeah. The way we've grown up is sort of it's all about going up north to Liverpool, Manchester United, wasn't it? Mm. Those were the measuring sticks.
Yeah, right?
Those two teams were the measuring sticks, and if you can go there and do damage in those places, they almost gave you confidence everywhere else, you know. And I think we went to Anfield that season. I think that was one of your Pires moments. Oof. When we went to Anfield, when he curled it around the corner. And I mean, when you go to Anfield and do that, well, there's nothing else to fear, right? There literally isn't. It's just, and that's how it felt. And it almost gave you a 10-game boost. You know, those games going up north were the ones that really defined us. And I, you know, it's a big part of how I think about football, really. And I think it's your ability to, when you go away, and, you know, for those who are listening that do travel to away games, and I used to go to a lot more back then, there was a certain tribal feeling to it, you know, and that you were really on an enemy territory, and the team, they almost had to play in a way that they represented you. And I'm, you know, going to away games way back there was difficult. You know, you get herded around, you know, in different towns, kept behind. It's not so easy as it is now. There was a much more of an issue off the pitch, shall we say. Not as bad, you know, as it has been before that, but still, it was still there. And so it was difficult to do these games. You know, it's difficult. And when the players did what they did on the pitch, it made it feel so worthwhile, right? And you felt that you was all one together. And you know, I want to use the word unity as a modern word, but it definitely was something we had at that period.
Yeah, something special. And hopefully we've rekindled some good memories for you during this chat.
Yeah, we have. You got me thinking. Yeah. Now, crikey. Well, one, I drink too much. because I can remember a lot of these events by where I was and bar I was in.
What party was I at?
yeah. You actually remember the fines. How do you remember that? Incredible.
Yeah, well, I did write a book about that season. So, it is kind of stuck in my head. Listen, we will leave it there. Thank you for going down memory lane with us, Clive. And we'll chat to you soon.
Anytime, mate. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Thank you very much to Clive. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePAFC, at ClivePAFC, and of course as part of the Arsenal Vision podcast crew. That's it for this particular episode. Remember, you can support Arsblog by signing up to our Patreon, patreon.com/Arsblog. It's a fiver a month. And not only does that go to support the site, you get lots of extra bonus content too as well. patreon.com/Arsblog. Until the next one, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.